From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 173 of Little Brother for the 12th of April, 2026. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Did you know that the White House has an app? Apparently they do. I have no idea why, but I guess that it makes some sense to some portion of the population. At any rate, if you are part of that portion of the population and you have this app, you should probably be aware that a developer has disassembled the app to see what it is and what it does, and found that it reports your exact location every 4.5 minutes, day and night, for some reason. Of course, if you are part of the population that would download such an app, well, you probably believe this is fake news anyway, so whatever. As part of what is being called a digital sovereignty strategy, France has launched an effort to migrate government operations off of Windows and onto Linux-based operating systems. This concerns not just the server side, but the desktop as well. And it's part of a general plan to migrate all French government operations to French-sourced software where possible, and European-sourced software where not. France does notably produce some industry-specific software already, such as the suite of pharmaceutical tools produced by Dassault Systèmes and the open-source IT management system GLPI. Microsoft Copilot has been observed inserting advertisements into GitHub pull requests. Searching GitHub for the phrase "quickly spin up Copilot coding agent" will turn up thousands, tens of thousands, of instances of the phrase, as part of an advertisement that Copilot has inserted, including a lightning bolt emoji, for Raycast. When I ran the search, there were a bit over 11,000 results. The event leading to the insertion is to use Copilot with Raycast to generate a pull request. Speaking of AI, we have to talk about the various shortages that AI is causing. RAM, GPUs, electricity, hard drives, and flash memory. Digital photography site Petapixel is reporting that, due to the shortage of flash memory, Sony has pretty much stopped manufacturing memory cards entirely. A Google translation of the press release on Sony's website reads, quote, "Due to the global shortage of semiconductors, memory, and other factors, it is anticipated that supply will not be able to meet demand for CF Express memory cards and SD memory cards for the foreseeable future. Therefore, we have decided to temporarily suspend the acceptance of orders from our authorized dealers and from customers at the Sony store," end quote. But hey, we get to watch scenes from Breaking Bad re-rendered as balloon characters. I guess some people are none too pleased about that. BBC is reporting that police in San Francisco have arrested a 20-year-old man who is believed to have lobbed a Molotov cocktail at the home of Sam Altman. Altman, for those unaware, is the CEO and one of the founders of OpenAI, which is the company behind the well-known AI chatbot, ChatGPT. This is not the way to solve these problems, peeps. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Here are the security alerts for this fortnight. I have a couple of things. The first one is a warning from the FBI. Now, it should not be news to any of my listeners that routers made by, for instance, TP-Link are vulnerable in a few ways, and it seems as though the FBI believes or wants us to believe that thousands of these routers have been observed in at least 23 states to have been hacked by Fancy Bear, a Russian military hacking group. While I do have a healthy distrust of the FBI, I don't see any reason not to take this warning seriously. If you have a TP-Link router, you should patch your systems. Seriously, download an update and install it. If you have the means and the knowledge at your disposal, you might actually instead replace the stock firmware with OpenWRT. That's not a difficult thing to do, but I'm not so arrogant as to believe that everybody's comfortable with it, so do as best as you can. The other one I have is unlikely to affect most of my listeners directly, but just in case I'm not the only one working in the industrial space, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, has issued an alert that an Iranian-affiliated hackers group have been actively targeting Internet-Connected Programmable Logic Controllers, PLCs, specifically models from Allen Bradley. Of course, you shouldn't connect PLCs to the internet directly. That really should be obvious, but apparently it's not. They are really not equipped to deal with the shit that the internet will throw at them. So if you have done so, please consider undoing it. Nothing good can come of it. A quick search using Shodan will indeed reveal very quickly that many have naively done exactly that, and that is now doubly not good. I want to go off script for a minute here and talk about an experience I had a couple of days ago. And this concerns the topic of enshittification. For those of you unfamiliar, enshittification is the popular term for what is, I think, on Wikipedia as platform decay, but really basically what it amounts to is the way that every single platform is being turned into a way to deliver ads and to collect statistics about us. And it's really kind of annoying. Well, this past Friday, I had occasion to go visit a location that is currently in the process of being transferred from its former owner to its current owner. And, what is going on is that the current owner, which is my employer, wanted to have a bunch of us show up to do a field trip, to do a site survey, and so on and so forth. Now, like many corporate locations, the address was one of those that begins with the number 1 and then has the name of a street because it's really kind of the only thing on that street. And that's actually the postal address. And that's what I entered into Google Maps in an attempt to find my way to this location. And what Google Maps figured out was that this particular location was not currently registered under its prior owner in their database. It was not currently registered under its new owner in their database. And what Google Maps decided to do instead was to very helpfully direct me to the realty office that was representing, I don't know whether it was our party or the other party, but it was a good 3 miles away from where I was actually trying to get. And I know 3 miles is not a tremendously distant distance to be off by, but if you don't know where you're going, it might as well be 300. Now, I don't know if this was an accident. I don't know if this was deliberate. But the bottom line is that I can completely see this type of result becoming the norm. And I am not about it. This is the reason why we need to fight in shitification at every turn. It is necessary that the platforms that we depend on continue to be dependable. I got a message from one of my listeners. Julie Bernstein writes, "Hi Chuck, maybe you already knew this, but Handela hack of Kash Patel's personal emails appears to have actually occurred several years ago. I just wanted to let you know because I know you discussed it on Little Brother." Well, nope. I had one slip by me. Every once in a while, a story surfaces as fresh, even when it's several years old. Usually, I can catch it. And this time, it seems like I didn't. That said, I'm not entirely sure. It's not even worse knowing that this happened before he was put in charge of the FBI. Anyway, thanks for listening and thanks for spotting the error. I appreciate you. I want to talk about something that I hadn't thought of mentioning until it resurfaced this past fortnight. So, it seems that some users of Signal were engaging in activities that the government would prefer that they not engage in, and since I'm not a judge or a member of a jury, I'll withhold judgment on the actual activity. It's not the point, anyway. One of the things that was in evidence was a partial transcript of a Signal conversation prompting the question, "How did they get that?" Now, a few times, I've talked about how the Signal Foundation takes steps to ensure that they do not leak content of messages that their excellent software has been used to pass. They do not possess the message content in a form that they could make intelligible. All they can give up when pressed for information is the time and the date on which an account was established and the time and date on which it was most recently used. And that's really quite amusing in context of the list of questions that they get peppered with on a subpoena, only for them to come back with a reply that's so short it fits on one side of a business card with room to spare. So, how did they get that? Well, as I've mentioned a number of times, the security of the application doesn't matter much if the operating system on which it is running isn't secure. That's one thing. However, I think a more important thing is how you've configured the app, which will have an impact on its security. Now think about this for a second. If you have notifications enabled in Signal, you can have them pop up a message on your lock screen, including the name of the sender and the text of the message. And I have to ask you, do you think that's secure? I mean, literally. All you have to do to get at the messages is put the device in front of you and watch the screen. But even if you don't show all of that information on the lock screen, and I don't, then you're still handing all of that information off to the operating system to notify you. Android or iOS can take that and hold it in a buffer or a database, which may even get backed up insecurely, and that is not going to have the level of security that you want. So, quick tutorial. Go into the settings for Signal Private Messenger and find the setting for notification content. Change it to no name or content. With that said, I'll come clean, and I will say that I, too, have had notifications enabled. By the time this airs, they'll be reduced to just, you have a Signal message, and nothing more. And you need to do the same right now. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. Well, I know I just said last episode that I won't platform shame. It's getting really difficult not to ask the question of why people keep using Microsoft. Yeah, I know. In the home market, you buy a computer, it's got Windows on it, unless you pony up for a Mac, but in the enterprise, why? Seriously, why? So, I mentioned the enterprise, which brings us to spaceships, which brings us to Artemis 2. Apparently, on day one of the mission, there was an IT problem, and it sounded like this.
We suspect the issue with your PCD may be Optimus software. We were able to connect to PCD 1 on, we can see it on the network, so with your Go, we can remote in and take a look directly.
Yeah, go for it. And then I also see that I have two Microsoft Outlooks, and neither one of those are working. If you want to remote in and check Optimus on those two Outlooks, that would be awesome.
All right, we will join in on your PCD, and we'll let you know when we're done.
Okay, first off, good on NASA for making arrangements that they can remote into the astronauts' computers. That's actually got to be profoundly useful. However, wouldn't it be better if instead they used reliable systems? If this had happened later in the mission, there would have been a multi-second lag in trying to operate a graphical user interface, which is painful to even think of. Something that could be operated by a command line, say a Linux, or something that won't break down in the first place, say Linux, could have made this a complete non-issue. Apollo never had this problem. I guess we should consider NASA lucky not to have had an update mid-mission. Seriously, why do we keep putting up with Windows? Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Azriel, Thriller at Play, Brute Trash Can, and Julie Bernstein for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 174 will drop on April 26th. Stay safe and be well.
The thing!